Chapter 150. Several people delighted, and the game chicken disgusted. The midshipman was all alive. Mr. Toots and Susan had arrived at last. Susan had run upstairs like a young woman bereft of her senses, and Mr. Toots and the chicken had gone into the parlor. "Oh, my own pretty darling sweet Miss Floyd!" cried the Nipper, running into Florence's room. "To think that it should come to this, and I should find you here, my own dear dove, with nobody to wait upon you, and no home to call your own. But never, never will I go away again, Miss Floy, for, though I may not gather moss, I'm not a rolling stone, nor is my heart a stone, or else it wouldn't bust as it is busting now, oh dear, oh dear." Pouring out these words, without the faintest indication of a stop, of any sort, Miss Nipper, on her knees beside her mistress, hugged her close. "Oh, love!" cried Susan. "I know all that's past, I know it all, my tender pet, and I may choke and give me air." Susan, dear good Susan. Said Florence. "Oh, bless her! Aye, that was her little maid, when she was a little child. And is she really, really, truly going to be married?" exclaimed Susan, in a burst of pain and pleasure, pride and grief, and heaven knows how many other conflicting feelings. "Who told you so?" said Florence. "Oh, gracious me! That innocentest creature Toots!" returned Susan hysterically. "I knew he must be right, my dear, because he took on so. He's the devotedest and innocentest infant. And is my darling," pursued Susan, with another close embrace and burst of tears, "really, really going to be married?" The mixture of compassion, pleasure, tenderness, protection, and regret with which the Nipper constantly recurred to this subject, and at every such once, raised her head to look in the young face and kiss it, and then laid her head again upon her mistress's shoulder, caressing her and sobbing, was as womanly, and good a thing, in its way, as ever was seen in the world. "There, there!" said the soothing voice of Florence presently. "Now you're quite yourself, dear Susan." Miss Nipper, sitting down upon the floor, at her mistress's feet, laughing, and sobbing, holding her pocket handkerchief to her eyes with one hand, and patting Diogenes with the other as he licked her face, confessed to being more composed, and laughed and cried a little more in proof of it. I never did see such a creature as that Toots," said Susan, "in all my born days, never." "So kind," suggested Florence. "And so comic." Susan sobbed. "The way he's been going on inside with me with that disrespectable chicken on the box." "About what, Susan?" Inquired Florence, timidly. "Oh, about Lieutenant Walters, and Captain Gills, and you, my dear Miss Floy, and the silent tomb," said Susan. "The silent tomb?" repeated Florence. "He says," here Susan burst into a violent hysterical laugh, "that he'll go down into it now immediately and quite comfortable, but bless your heart, my dear Miss Floy, he won't. He's a great deal too happy in seeing other people happy for that. He may not be a Solomon," pursued the Nipper, with her usual volubility, "nor do I say he is, but this, I do say, a less selfish human creature human nature never knew." Miss Nipper, being still hysterical, laughed immoderately after making this energetic declaration, and then informed Florence that he was waiting below to see her, which would be a richer payment for the trouble he had had in his late expedition. Florence entreated Susan to beg of Mr. Toots as a favor, that she might have the pleasure of thanking him for his kindness, and Susan, in a few moments, produced that young gentleman, still very much disheveled in appearance, and stammering exceedingly. "Miss Dombey," said Mr. Toots. to be again permitted to gaze at least, not to gaze, but I don't exactly know what I was going to say, but it's of no consequence. I have to thank you so often, apostrophe returned Florence, giving him both her hands, with all her innocent gratitude beaming in her face, that I have no words left, and don't know how to do it. Apostrophe, Miss Dombey, apostrophe said Mr. Toots, in an awful voice, if it was possible that you could, consistently with your angelic nature, curse me, you would if I may be allowed to say, so floor me infinitely less, than by these undeserved expressions of kindness their effect upon me is, but, apostrophe said Mr. Toots, abruptly, this is a digression, and of no consequence at all. Apostrophe, as there seemed to be no means of replying to this, but by thanking him again, Florence thanked him again. I could wish, apostrophe said Mr. Toots, to take this opportunity, Miss Dombey, if I might, of entering into a word of explanation. I should have had the pleasure of returning with Susan at an earlier period. But, in the first place, we didn't know the name of the relation to whose house she had gone, and, in the second, as she had left that relation's, and gone to another at a distance, I think that scarcely anything short of the sagacity of the chicken would have found her out in the time. Apostrophe, Florence was sure of it. This, however, apostrophe said Mr. Toots, is not the point. The company of Susan has been, I assure you, Miss Dombey, a consolation and satisfaction to me, in my state of mind, more easily conceived than described. The journey has been its own reward. That, however, still, is not the point. Miss Dombey, I have before observed, that I know I am not what is considered a quick person. I am perfectly aware of that. I don't think anybody could be better acquainted with his own, if it was not too strong an expression, I should say with the thickness of his own head than myself. But, Miss Dombey, I do, notwithstanding, perceive the state of things with Lieutenant Walters. Whatever agony that state of things may have caused me, which is of no consequence at all, I am bound to say that Lieutenant Walters is a person who appears to be worthy of the blessing that has fallen on his brow. May he wear it long, and appreciate it, as a very different, and very unworthy individual, that it is of no consequence to name, would have done. That, however, still, is not the point. Miss Dombey, Captain Gills is a friend of mine, and during the interval that is now elapsing, I believe it would afford Captain Gills pleasure to see me occasionally coming backwards and forwards here. It would afford me pleasure so to come. But I cannot forget that I once committed myself, fatally, at the corner of the square at Brighton, and if my presence will be, in the least degree, unpleasant to you, I only ask you to name it to me now, and assure you that I shall perfectly understand you. I shall not consider it at all unkind, and shall only be too delighted and happy to be honored with your confidence. Apostrophe, Mr. Toots, apostrophe returned Florence, if you, who are so old, and true a friend of mine, were to stay away from this house now, you would make me very unhappy. It can never, never, give me any feeling but pleasure to see you. Miss Dombey, apostrophe said Mr. Toots, taking out his pocket handkerchief, if I shed a tear, it is a tear of joy. It is of no consequence, and I am very much obliged to you. I may be allowed to remark, after what you have so kindly said, that it is not my intention to neglect my person any longer. Apostrophe, Florence received this intimation with the prettiest expression of perplexity possible. I mean, apostrophe said Mr. Toots, that I shall consider it my duty as a fellow creature generally, until I am claimed by the silent tomb, to make the best of myself, and to have my boots as brightly polished, as circumstances will admit of. This is the last time, Miss Dombey, of my intruding any observation of a private and personal nature. I thank you very much indeed. if I am not, in a general way, as sensible as my friends could wish me to be, or as I could wish myself, I really am, upon my word and honor, particularly sensible of what is considerate and kind. I feel, said Mr. Toots, in an impassioned tone, as if I could express my feelings, at the present moment, in a most remarkable manner, if I could only get a start. Appearing not to get it, after waiting a minute or two to see if it would come, Mr. Toots took a hasty leave, and went below to seek the captain, whom he found in the shop. Captain Gills, said Mr. Toots, what is now to take place between us, takes place under the sacred seal of confidence. It is the sequel, Captain Gills, of what has taken place between myself and Miss Dombey, upstairs. Alow and aloft, eh, my lad? Murmured the captain. Exactly so, Captain Gills, said Mr. Toots, whose fervor of acquiescence was greatly heightened by his entire ignorance of the captain's meaning. Miss Dombey, I believe, Captain Gills, is to be shortly united to Lieutenant Walters? Why, eh, my lad? We're all shipmates here. Waller and sweetheart will be joined together in the house of bondage, as soon as the askings is over, whispered Captain Cuttle, in his ear. The askings, Captain Gills, repeated Mr. Toots. In the church, down yonder, said the captain, pointing his thumb over his shoulder. Oh, yes, returned Mr. Toots. And then, said the captain, in his hoarse whisper, and tapping Mr. Toots on the chest with the back of his hand, and falling from him with a look of infinite admiration, what fallers! That there pretty creature, as delicately brought up as a foreign bird, goes away upon the roaring main with Waller on a voyage to China. Lord, Captain Gills, said Mr. Toots. Eh? Nodded the captain. The ship as took him up, when he was wrecked in the hurricane, that had drove her clean out of her course, was a China trader, and Waller made the voyage, and got into favor, aboard and ashore being as smart and good a lad as ever stepped in so, the supercargo dying at Canton, he got made, having acted as clerk afore, and now he's supercargo aboard another ship, same owners. And so, you see, repeated the captain, thoughtfully, the pretty creature goes away upon the roaring main with Waller, on a voyage to China. Mr. Toots and Captain Cuttle heaved a sigh in concert. What then? Said the captain. She loves him true. He loves her true. The mass should have loved and tended of her, treated of her like the beasts as perish. When she, cast out of home, come here to me, and dropped upon them planks, her wounded heart was broke. I know it. I, Edward Cuttle, see it. There's naught but true, kind, steady love, as can ever piece it up again. If so be I didn't know that, and didn't know as Waller was her true love, brother, and she is, I'd have these here blue arms and legs chopped off, afore I'd let her go. But I know it, and what then? Why then, I say, heaven go with them both, and so it will. Amen. Captain Gills, said Mr. Toots, let me have the pleasure of shaking hands. You've a way of saying things that gives me an agreeable warmth all up my back. I say amen. You are aware, Captain Gills, that I too have adored Miss Dombey. Cheer up. Said the captain, laying his hand on Mr. Toots' shoulder. Stand by, boy. It is my intention, Captain Gills, returned the spirited Mr. Toots, to cheer up. Also to stand by, as much as possible. When the silent tomb shall yawn, Captain Gills, I shall be ready for burial, not before. But not being certain, just at present, of my power over myself, what I wish to say to you, and what I shall take it as a particular favor, if you will mention to Lieutenant Walters, is as follows. Is as follows, echoed the captain. Steady. apostrophe, Miss Dombey being so inexpressibly kind, apostrophe, continued Mr. Toots with watery eyes, as to say, that my presence is the reverse of disagreeable to her, and you and everybody here being no less forbearing and tolerant towards one who certainly, apostrophe, said Mr. Toots, with momentary dejection, would appear to have been born by mistake, I shall come backwards and forwards of an evening, during the short time we can all be together. But what I ask is this. If, at any moment, I find that I cannot endure the contemplation of Lieutenant Walter's bliss, and should rush out, I hope, Captain Gills, that you and he will both consider it as my misfortune, and not my fault, or the want of inward conflict. That you will feel convinced I bear no malice to any living creature, least of all to Lieutenant Walters himself, and that you will casually remark that I have gone out for a walk, or probably to see what o'clock it is by the Royal Exchange. Captain Gills, if you could enter into this arrangement, and could answer for Lieutenant Walters, it would be a relief to my feelings, that I should think cheap at the sacrifice of a considerable portion of my property. Apostrophe, my lad, apostrophe, returned the captain, say no more. There ain't a color you can run up, as won't be made out, and answered to, by Waller and self. Apostrophe, Captain Gills, apostrophe, said Mr. Toots, my mind is greatly relieved. I wish to preserve the good opinion of all here. I mean well, upon my honor, however badly I may show it. You know, apostrophe, said Mr. Toots, it's as exactly as Burgess and Company wished to oblige a customer with a most extraordinary pair of trousers, and could not cut out what they had in their minds. Apostrophe, with this apposite illustration, of which he seemed a little proud, Mr. Toots gave Captain Cuttle his blessing and departed. The honest captain, with his heart's delight in the house, and Susan tending her, was a beaming, and a happy man. As the days flew by, he grew more beaming and more happy, every day. After some conferences with Susan, for whose wisdom the captain had a profound respect, and whose valiant precipitation of herself on Mrs. McStinger he could never forget, he proposed to Florence that the daughter of the elderly lady who usually sat under the blue umbrella in the dental market should, for prudential reasons and considerations of privacy, be superseded in the temporary discharge of the household duties by someone who was not unknown to them, and in whom they could safely confide. Susan, being present, then named, in furtherance of a suggestion she had previously offered to the captain, Mrs. Richards. Florence brightened at the name. And Susan, setting off that very afternoon to the Tootle domicile, to sound Mrs. Richards, returned in triumph the same evening, accompanied by the identical rosy-cheeked apple-faced Polly, whose demonstrations, when brought into Florence's presence, were hardly less affectionate than those of Susan Nipper herself. This piece of generalship accomplished, from which the captain derived uncommon satisfaction, as he did, indeed, from everything else that was done, whatever it happened to be, Florence had next to prepare Susan for their approaching separation. This was a much more difficult task, as Miss Nipper was of a resolute disposition, and had fully made up her mind that she had come back never to be parted from her old mistress any more. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.